Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to the Ghibliotech, the podcast that studies at the school of the world's greatest animation studio, Studio Ghibli. I'm Michael Leader, and I've seen the lot of them.
And I'm Jake Cunningham, and I'm the new kid in town.
So join us on our quest into the glorious world of Ghibli. Jake, it's an auspicious occasion right now.
Yeah, I actually, within this podcast studio, had kind of like an overwhelming moment where I realised that I've seen them all.
We've come to the end of the official Studio Ghibli library.
Yeah.
22 films.
It's weird. Well, I mean, what a strange one to end it on as well. I don't think anyone would have ever planned out a version of a Ghibli rewatch that ends with Ocean Waves.
Well, this isn't necessarily the end. This is the final Studio Ghibli-produced feature that we're going to do on this podcast, at least until Miyazaki's new film comes out in 2020/2021. We do have two more films in this mini-series, but they're both pre-Ghibli films. So the way we're going to finish this mini-series is to go back. We've got to go back to the beginning. We've got to do the prequels to see where it all started. But yes, Ocean Waves, the TV movie from 1993 that very few people in the West actually know about. But congratulations, Jake, you've made it this far.
Thank you. Well, I feel like quite proud of the journey we've been on and mm-hmm. what we've made, but also quite sad that there are currently no more films.
Yeah.
And I think this is a good time to ask people to maybe tell us what to do next.
Well, we've already had so many good suggestions. We set up the Twitter account at Ghibliotech for this fourth mini-series, and we've already had such great feedback from people saying in what direction we could go in the future. If you have any bright ideas, we're open to suggestions. Do we go for different filmmakers? Do we go deeper? There's the On Your Mark music video, Jake, which I know you're raring to watch and talk about.
Maybe let's do that as a double-length episode as well.
We've got to go long and On Your Mark. But first, Jake, we need to round off the Ghibli collection with Ocean Waves. A young man spots a woman he once knew on the opposite platform at a railway station, and memories from his high school years start flooding back. Taku and his best friend Yutaka are headed back to school for what looks like another uneventful year, but they soon find their friendship tested by the arrival of a beautiful new transfer student from Tokyo. When Taku joins her on a trip to Tokyo, the school erupts with rumours, and the three friends are forced to come to terms with their changing relationships.
So, Michael, we've got memories, we've got train stations, we've got high school kids, but this is not Only Yesterday.
It's not. It actually comes 2 years after Only Yesterday. Let's start in 1993. This is right in that period where Ghibli is making films at peak productivity, almost a feature a year from 1988 to 1995. And in 1992, they just released Porco Rosso, which was a sizable hit. Ocean Waves comes onto the slate as a potential project for younger members of the Ghibli staff, those in their 20s and 30s who are gaining experience on the films of Miyazaki and Takahata and are going to be allowed to stretch out and make a film all by themselves. So therefore, this would be the first film by Ghibli that wasn't directed by Miyazaki or Takahata. and the responsibility falls to a guy called Tomomi Mochizuki, who at that point was 36, and even by that young age, he'd had quite a stellar CV of directing anime TV series dating back all the way through the 80s. One series he was involved in that jumps out at me looking at that list is he was series director on the anime of Rumiko Takahashi's gender-bending, shape-shifting fantasy series Ranma Half, which was a manga I read as a teenager. It's really
You're giving me
fun.
Such like wild, excited eyes, expecting me to know what that is as well.
Oh, I really hope some of our listeners know what Ranma Half is. But anyway, Ocean Waves is based on a novel by Saiko Himuro, which was at that point being serialized with illustrations by an artist called Katsuya Kondo in Animage magazine, which, of course, Toshio Suzuki was the editor and publisher of. So you can see the connections here. Katsuya Kondo is brought on board as the character designer and one of the animators for the project. And if you look at the credits, there are all sorts of familiar Ghibli names in there. You have Yoshifumi Kondo, 2 years before he'd make his directorial debut with Whisper of the Heart. He's on animation duties, as is Masashi Ando, who had become an important key animator and character designer in his own right on Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke. He'd then collaborate outside of Ghibli with Satoshi Kon on Paranoia Agent, Paprika, Tokyo Godfathers. And you also have Keiko Niwa, who I don't know if we've mentioned her name so far. She was the writer who wrote the screenplay for the film, but she'd become a really prominent presence late in the game with Ghibli. She wrote or co-wrote the scripts for Tales from Earthsea, Arrietty, From Up on Poppy Hill, and When Marnie Was There. This was her first Ghibli credit, weirdly 15 years almost, before she'd come back and make more films with them. So there are all sorts of top players involved. This isn't like a reserve team effort, is what I'm saying. However, the original plan was for this to be a quick, cheap, but high-quality production, yet it blows all its deadlines and comes in over budget. We usually judge the success of these films by quoting box office statistics, but this was a TV movie. It played on Nippon TV in May 1993 and has never found much of a reputation within the Ghibli library. It's seen as a curio. And internationally, at least, it's definitely an underseen film. I believe now that they did a new dub for Only Yesterday, it's the only film in the Ghibli library that's never been given an English language audio track. Which is weird. You'd think they'd find some way to do that.
Maybe we'll do it.
Oh, we could totally do it.
Yeah.
Two of us and Steph.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those are the three leads right there. And who's to say about the relationship between the two men in the film?
But we should talk about Tomomi Mochizuki, because he has this important historic role as the first non-Miyazaki, non-Takahata director at Ghibli. He never makes another film with Ghibli. This is his one and done. He goes back to working in telly. He's had quite an incredibly successful career. Worked very consistently for the 20-odd years since 1993, but never really made another feature, never worked with Ghibli again. This was his only gig.
How odd.
Curious.
Yeah.
And I think this is a curious film as well, Jake, and I can't wait to dig into it with you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, Jake, we've said this a couple of times now. This is the first Studio Ghibli film that wasn't directed by Miyazaki or Takahata. Is this familiar? Is this different? When this finally starts, what do you think?
Instantly, it does feel familiar. But it's hard when we watch these films to think, oh, yeah, that's obviously not Miyazaki. Mm-hmm. And to pinpoint, what does that exactly mean? Because you, in a way, you can tell within like 30 seconds. There's just a feeling. And you know that that's not there with this. Mm-hmm. You mentioned this is 2 years after Only Yesterday. And we're on a train platform. We've got... we're taking that train to the airport. We're hopping on an aeroplane. We're looking at a young romance. It's got that feeling of Only Yesterday, of Whisper of the Heart. Even from Up on Poppy Hill, there's a feeling of there. There's definitely some familiarity within the wider Studio Ghibli world that makes this totally slot in with those other films. Like, this does not feel like an alien. Mm-hmm. I think like Earthsea feels more made by someone else outside of Ghibli than this does, for sure.
Even though the character designs are slightly different, they're more elongated, more human in scale.
Yeah, more like Cat Returns.
Interesting, yeah. Well, Cat Returns is definitely a good example because that's something where the character design is so different. The colour palettes are a bit more muted, a bit more pastely, maybe.
A little bluer.
Yeah, but it really is. You're very much in that subgenre of the Ghibli romance movies. I find it interesting that Only Yesterday's 1991, this is 93, Whisper of the Heart is 95. They're just almost leapfrogging over the more heightened fantasy films like Porco Rosso and just then slotting in with these human dramas. Mm. And yes, it hits a lot of those familiar beats that we see, strangely, in later period Ghibli. When Marnie was there from Up on Poppy Hill, share a lot of DNA with this, and I wonder whether that's because they share a screenwriter. Mm. You have Young Love, you have Meet Cute.
It's interesting that the screenwriter never actually worked with one of
the big
yeah.
dogs.
Mm. Well, she would've favoured by the studio, but over five films never works with them.
Well, that suggests to me that she's in with Toshio Suzuki, but also she would have worked with Hayao Miyazaki because he technically co-wrote from Poppy Hill, and she would have brought something to it. And also Arietti, he did help with some planning there. So there's who knows behind the scenes, but she never wrote a film for the big dogs. But that's because Takahata and Miyazaki like to write their own scripts. But what is different about this within that subgenre is that this is the only Ghibli romance film that's from a boy's point of view, a boy protagonist, which is actually, if you look at Ghibli as a whole, they're mainly female protagonists. So it's weird to have that here, unique.
It is strange. And it kind of takes a while to watch the film that you realize that's what's different about it. Mm-hmm. And then it almost gets a bit laddie.
I know,
with
right?
With that young teenage boy personality, which does make sense if it's from his perspective that it would be this type of character, but it's a bit weird. Mm-hmm. Like, this is maybe the only Ghibli film that's a little pervy.
Yes, in a gaze way, G-A-Z-E, there are those sequences where there's no two ways of, there's no other way of describing it. They're ogling the girls playing tennis. Mm. And there's boob jiggle, which is something that is common in anime. And that sort of ogling is common in manga as well, certain subgenres of manga. But you don't see it in a Ghibli movie. Mm. Admittedly, our main character is not interested in that girl, but they're still ogling.
No, the camera or the frame still goes there, spends time there.
Yeah.
To then make the point that whilst there's a borderline upskirt shot of the lead female playing tennis, that over the top it's like, oh yeah, we fancy them because they're so good at tennis. I don't think the film quite thinks that.
Mm-hmm. And then later in the film they casually swap candid photos of the female characters lounging on the beach when they go on the school
trip. It's like a casual narration over the top of like, I bought some candid photos of her from a friend, as if to say, we all do that. That's just a normal thing to do.
Mate, there's definitely some elements of culture clash here, and this is a film that maybe feels dated. Who knows? We can't really comment very incisively and insightfully on the Japanese lad culture. In anime, you definitely have varying ways of portraying this age of boyhood, manhood, teenhood. Either they go lean fully into that sort of perverted, ogling territory, the boys who are erupting with nosebleeds around young girls. You see that archetype of character in other anime series. Or there's the soft boy archetype, to adopt a phrase that's used online. And these characters seem to vacillate between those two extremes. Mm. You're not sure whether that we're watching these sensitive souls or these horn dog youngsters.
Mm. And that they seem to be frustrated about that. Like, they cannot figure out who they are and how to deal with girls. And in a way, that makes it a great teen boy film, because they're not super confident, and they're not the sporty guy, and they're not totally arty, or they're not super clever. And so it's maybe occupying more of that super bad space of just kind of being the awkward guys on the side.
Yeah. It's fascinating characterization, and they're clearly baffled by this young woman, this character that we only really see through the male character's eyes, who is quite interesting and almost, I'd say, half a perfect character. This young woman who appears from Tokyo, she's complicated, she's cosmopolitan, she clearly has some drama or damage or baggage in her life, but this is only... it's only halfway to really realizing that in this film. I think this film has a lot going for it and really a lot of potential, but doesn't quite get it. It's the fact that it's also 77 minutes long. If it was maybe 20 minutes longer, you could have more sequences.
I don't think it doesn't spend enough time with any of the major characters to really fully tip them into interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm perfectly happy to be spending time with them, but... if you did take it any longer, like, they'd have to do some serious work to make you feel like you want to be spending more time with them as well.
What is interesting and really compelling for me about this film, and I think goes completely against this film's reputation as something of a forgotten gem because it was made for TV and was quick and cheap and made by the reserve team, is the fact that it's packed with so much detail. The background art, the incidental art, the way the production design, the sets... so-called sets, as this is animation, it's packed with detail and things that you do see in some Ghibli films. You mentioned trains and planes and bicycles and umbrellas and all these. It has a great umbrella scene that would go in the annals of Ghibli's umbrella scenes. But it also has stuff you don't see anywhere else. The details of magazines, the details of families sitting down and watching TV together, train stations, drinks cans. You very much have brand logos in this film. And it's beautiful and detailed and so intriguing.
In a different way, though, to how we speak about the detail and the beauty of the way that they will present breakfast or a dish of ramen, it's different to that. Like, it still feels heightened. Like, there's the shot of what the Sprite can is being, like, put on a window ledge, and it's beautiful. But it is colder, it's gloomier, and not in a When Marnie Was There way, because it's just going for reality.
Yeah.
It's more like everything is just overcast and it's just trying really hard to set up this real glum world.
Mm-hmm. And, well, it's in the script, isn't it? It's interesting. I wonder if Keiko Niwa wrote this line in both this and From Up on Poppy Hill, where she said in this one it's like a cheap soap opera.
Mm.
I think in the line in Poppy Hill is, this is like a cheap melodrama. I wonder if... that's just the subtitling, two different subtitlers went for different words and it's the same word in Japanese or something. But that's what this is, really. It's a light film that passes the time with a little bit of intrigue, a little bit of romance, a little bit of nostalgic yearning.
But you kind of want it to swing a bit further.
Uh-huh.
Like, it doesn't reach the points about, like, it's going for some things about nostalgia and memory. Like, there are these postcard inserts where the frame gradually gets smaller over the course of three shots to move between time periods. Really neat. And it's trying to do it in a way that's acting in the same way that something like Only Yesterday might do with the way that it treats filling the frame. And then we also have how in the edit it might cut in to a close-up of a new scene before doing the establishing shot. So we'll see a lantern and then we'll pop out to see where that actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, for me, that's the film trying to represent how we feel memories, that we feel them in a sensory way, that we will immediately remember first a smell, first the appearance of something, first how something felt, before we remember what that whole day was, what that experience was. And stuff like this, when that happens, I think that is clever. Like, mm-hmm. this is interesting what you're doing here. But it never takes the story far enough to kind of match those experimental ideas. And I really wanted it to. And I wanted it to, or to go in a complete opposite direction and push into that melodrama like a Marnie or a Poppy Hill, where at least you're engaged because of how dramatic it is. And it doesn't quite do either for me.
Well, I think you were primed based on these other films we watched, where When Marnie Was There has the twist about who Marnie is, From When Poppy Hill has the incest shenanigans, that would this have a wrinkle like that?
Yeah, well, I was really hoping it would. You said it's a curio. Mm. I was thinking maybe it's a bi-curio. There is...
Right, so you wanted some soft boy love, didn't you?
And to be honest, I am going to put it out there. I think there is.
Right.
The film is called Ocean Waves, and the most romantic moment of the film happens between two men as they're standing by the dock, as the waves are coming in and the music's heightened and it's at night and they're really into each other. And the treatment of the friendship between the two male leads is as romantic as any scene between either of them and the female lead as well. And I don't think I'm being mad. I genuinely believe that.
It's your galaxy brain moment.
I don't think it's galaxy brain. I do think it's there in the film. When they meet each other, the two lads, in an art class, there are all these Roman sculptures around that it cuts around to. It's very like Call Me By Your Name opening titles. And he comes through the art class and they talk about meeting for the first time and how he would be a friend for life. We'd never forget him. And genuinely, yes, I think it's great to treat friendships with the same seriousness and romance as we would treat a romantic relationship. But I do think the film does slightly tip the scales, even if it is by 1%, in a romantic direction between the two of them. And I am totally here for it, and I wish it pushed it further.
So in the American remake, Timothée Chalamet.
Yes.
Lucas Hedges. Mm-hmm. Who'd be the female lead? Would that be, just get Saoirse Ronan back and have a Lady Bird revival?
Yeah, absolutely. Come on, that would be really good.
And I think
Twitter would melt.
They would, wouldn't they? That would, and we can mention American remakes for this one, because this is the only Ghibli film that even acknowledges that America exists, right? And they go to the United States. They go to Hawaii, which is something that when it happens, you realize, wait a second, this is strange, because Miyazaki and Takahata are so Eurocentric, or Japanese-centric, of course.
I just said that this film doesn't do anything dramatic, but for us, doing that was crazy.
And having American tourists walking past and speaking their sort of gibberish version of English, that's pretty huge.
Mm.
As somebody like us, who's so deep down the rabbit hole with Ghibli, where you're really searching for meaning in all these things, and the fact that, you know, Miyazaki Senior and Junior and Takahata have always gone for these Japanese settings, as both Miyazaki and Takahata got later in their careers, they go deeper into the sense of Japanese history, Japanese culture, fairy tales, mythology, history. And then Tomomi Mochizuki almost innocently just throws in, yeah, we can just get a plane to Hawaii. And there are scenes there. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. And I think kind of plays into a bit that I struggled with the film about how the characters relate to wealth. That kind of confused me. Because there's definitely a hierarchy between Kochi and Tokyo, and people from Tokyo being, you know, wealthier and more powerful, and the way that she, when she joins the school, is kind of treated with an aura around her. And that made me think, is there kind of this wealth divide between the two? And that's definitely, I felt like this alluded to, that she would have that power. But then they all just go on holiday to Hawaii anyway.
On a school trip.
Yeah.
Quite a fancy school trip, isn't it?
So I was thinking during the film, like, how much money does everyone have? Are these like Are these super rich people? Or yeah. is this a normal thing to do, to go on a school trip to Hawaii because your other school trip got cancelled?
Yes. And you do have, there is a thread through the film which is lost on us reading subtitles about accents and manner as shown through your dialect.
Yeah, she makes fun of them for...
She makes fun of them for sounding like they're from old movies. But then she's also made fun of by having this brusque Tokyo dialect that she comes in, and she always sounds so arrogant and stuck up because she speaks in a certain way. And there's this sort of dual, double-edged prejudice here based on accent, which feeds in almost to Only Yesterday had that as well, of course, but is lost for us and would be almost impossible to translate if you did do a dub. So it's clear there are lots of aspects here that just don't quite come to fruition.
But that's it. It's like it's trying for all of these things that we kind of wish it went a bit further on, maybe. Mm-hmm.
But where would it rank in the swoonometer for you? We're going to go over the Ghibli romances. So you have your subtextual romance here. Maybe that will actually bring it up the leaderboard, you know. But where would it rank for you alongside Whisper of the Heart, Only Yesterday?
There is not like a soaring moment in this. Mm-hmm. Like, looking back recently from Poppy Hill, I think that actually has, for all its sins, some really romantic, sweet, kind of heart-wrenching moments. And I can't say I felt like that attached to anyone in this to get rooting for any romance in it. I think she's a little mean and they're a little mean and everyone's a little bit annoying. Whereas like Only Yesterday, come on, like this walking up the steps into the sky, like that's a proper swing.
Or just the kids at the end.
Yeah, I think beautiful.
When Marnie was there on the boat, on the lake.
Oh,
there are, and Whisper of the Heart, chock full of those moments.
Wind Rises, just holding hands.
Yeah. So maybe perhaps low down in the spoonometer.
For me, sadly.
But where would it rank for you overall in the Ghibli library?
Ah, that's time to find out. Let's move on to the leaderboard.
Jake, this is the last Ghibli feature. We do have Little Norse Prince and Castle Cagliostro to come, which are pre-Ghibli films. So we'll put them in the leaderboard, the Ghibli Attack leaderboards. But where would this rank for you overall?
I'm sure you probably gathered from the conversation that it was not an ideal one for me. Mm-hmm. I think when we kind of view these two realms of Ghibli films, of these fantasy ones and then these real world ones, for me, this is the Arrietty of the real world ones.
Oh, interesting.
It just, like, not a lot of it really just took me to any of the heights that those other films have done. So I think maybe it's fair for me to put this bottom down, like, 18th for me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's putting it between Earthsea and Howl's Moving Castle.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'll agree completely. For me, this would be 19th, so it's below My Neighbours the Yamadas, and that's just above Arrietty. It had so much potential, but what they're doing in this film is done better elsewhere. One thing I would say is I've never seen this film on the big screen or on Blu-ray. It's had a Blu-ray re-release recently. I've only ever seen it on DVD. And some of those shots, landscape shots, the sequence where you see Kochi Castle at the end of the film lit up at night... Mm. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it's a very gif-able film.
Exactly.
As well.
It's also the film that takes place in Tokyo, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to Tokyo, so we could recreate some of these sequences. You can be on the opposite side of the platform to me, and we can have our little moment.
And everyone will get it because so many people know about this film.
Exactly. But that's what we've done with Ghibli Attack. We've gone deeper and deeper. You understand what we're doing. But the great thing about going to Tokyo is that we've got a list as long as your arm of things to do and Ghibli moments that we can try and recreate. We're going to go to the Whisper of the Heart. We're going to go to Tama Hills, aren't we? We're going to
push you up a hill on a bike.
We're going to sing some John Denver while we're doing it.
I mean, we do that every day anyway.
But what's amazing as well about having the Twitter account is people sending us ideas as well of what to do in Tokyo, because that's one thing people seem to come back from Tokyo with, which is a list of recommendations.
Yeah, do get them sending. It's at Ghibli Attack on Twitter, and we want to hear not only what we should be doing after this series, but what we should be doing in Tokyo, which is going to be imminent. So we want those recommendations ASAP.
Exactly. But we're not done with this mini-series. We have two more films left. We're going back to the big guys, Hayao Miyazaki and Isao Takahata, but we're going to go back to their directorial debuts. And first up in the next episode is Little Norse Prince.
Yes. The only thing I know about this one is that I get confused about the name of it.
Because it has also maybe seven...
Horus, the Prince of the Sun?
Yeah. Or Hol's Prince of the Sun.
Okay.
It's the earliest film we'll do on this podcast. It's made years and years, decades before Ghibli are founded. It's going to be an interesting one, Jake, because it's the one that looks nothing like a Ghibli film. We hope you enjoyed your time in the Ghibli Tech this week. You can catch up with us on Twitter at GhibliTech, or if you want to talk to us individually, you can catch Jake on Twitter at Jake H. Cunningham.
And Michael at Michael J. Leader.
Ghibliotech is a Little Dot Studios production. Our music is made by Anthony Ng, our artwork is by Sophie Moe, and Jamie Mazner is our audio wizard. The show is produced by Michael Leader, Jake Cunningham, Harold McShill, and Steph Watts. That's me.
Hi, everyone. Our little nugget this week is another round of cameo spotting. Did you spot Porco Rosso in Ocean Waves? He appears about 52 minutes in, chowing down at the school festival. And also right near the end, at about 68 minutes, there's a poster for the Porco Rosso film on the train platform.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.